right, Breaker One Niner on interwebs. Get your ears on for the GMB podcast. We've got a really cool guest on today, so I'm going to skip the super tired intro. I'm Andy, Ryan's here, and also a guy named Tony Stubblebean. Stubblebine, I apologize.
We went over that before the show.
I know, we totally covered it. I knew I was going to screw it up. I, like, mentally rehearsed it, and I still screwed it up. But I have a habit of doing that, partly because I'm somewhat bilingual, and so my first language suffers as a result. But maybe you can help me fix that today. which is possibly my super awkward transition into... Tony is a CEO of Lyft, which is a really cool app that helps people create habits. And Tony, if you don't mind, I'll just let you kind of introduce yourself and a little bit about what Lyft does.
Sure, right on. Good to be here with you guys. Lyft is this app. It's for the web, it's for the iPhone, and it's for Android to help people achieve goals. Habits are a lot of what people work on. I think right now the Lyft community is working on a little bit more than 100,000 different goals. And the way that we're helping is just basically pulling out the latest techniques that come out of mostly the world of positive psychology, and just using that to motivate people, to guide people, to instruct people to achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve. And we try to do it in a simple way, so it's the kind of thing where, you know, you could pick the app up real quickly and get moving.
Very cool. I have used the app a little bit, and it's pretty intuitive. You can select either goals that are very popular that other people have kind of recommended, or you can enter in basically whatever you want, I guess. And it just kind of reminds you and helps you stay on track with it. And I actually have found it very helpful for remembering to stretch.
Yeah, right. Stretching is one of those fitness ones, right? Like that kind of falls by the wayside, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was my own fitness story is sort of like I had a period where I was super fit, and then I put all of that energy into work, and then I realized that I was an idiot and that I, you know, wasn't fit anymore, and I missed it. And so now, like, I'm probably like a lot of people, just in that mode of like, how do I get back? Like, I'm just working like crazy. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I remember from being really fit was that I used to get all these muscle pulls, and like that was really the biggest limiter. And probably if I had, you know, worked out half as long and done like stretched and done preventative stuff during that other half, like I actually would have been more successful.
Yeah, and this is actually, so that's interesting because actually our biggest selling program is a flexibility program. But the interesting thing, I think, as you said, when you're most fit is a lot of people really just put all their energy into that one thing. And I think we know that it's like this for anything, right? So, you know, you do that and then you start to work on your business and realize that you need to work on your business. So you put all of your energy into that. So really, you know, it's about that balance. And so, I mean, getting back to the habits and what you do, I think it's just making sure to create positive habits in each areas of your life to make sure that you're doing just enough to, I don't want to say get by, but be successful no matter what you do. And so, especially with your app, that's why I think this is a very good thing too, because you can take a look at different areas of your life and actually focus on building better habits for everything.
Right. Do you want, maybe we'll get a little bit sciencey here, but not go too deep on it. There's this framework that I use for people all the time. Basically, we call it a cognitive stamina framework. And there's this concept basically around decision fatigue, that every small thing you do in a day ends up draining your ability to make decisions. So a decision could be as simple as like, what color socks to wear today, right? And so over the course of the day, maybe you have enough stamina to make, you know, 500, 1,000 of those decisions. But once they're all worn out, then you can't really, you know, keep going. And people think of that as they're losing willpower. But really, it's been measured by science that there's a drain on that. And if you think instead of yourself having like a cognitive budget, then when you're wondering, well, what's it going to take for me to get to the gym you know, after work, you could say, well, the reason you're not going to the gym is because you were just worn out. Like, that decision to make to go to the gym is too hard because you made too many decisions before it. And so the people that are really successful, what they've done is they've put a lot of work into creating habits in their life and creating routines so that the act of living isn't draining them all day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And it's great because I really wanted to ask you about that. I like the concept of thinking of it like a budget because it really explains a couple of things. One is that how you keep spending your decision budget kind of all day, right? And then at the end of the day, you know, even if you don't really feel tired, you feel like you just want to veg, right? And that's what that veg state really is like you just don't want to make decisions. It's not like you can't do anything.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
If somebody calls you right then and says, hey, do you want to like have a beer? Like, it's really easy to go have a beer, but you just don't want to decide for yourself to do it.
That's exactly right. I mean, your empathy for that moment is exactly right. And this is actually, it's kind of a new concept for people. First time I saw it was a New York Times article 2 years ago talking about the science. Mm-hmm. But I was just at a neuroscience conference 2 weeks ago where we were framing the cognitive stamina in terms of a budget, which is actually a more actionable way to kind of apply this theory. And yeah, it blew people's minds. Like, this is what I think the reason it blows people's minds is because there's so much you can do here, right? Like, up until recently, we've been thinking about willpower as this thing that is almost, a moral thing, right? Like, some people have more willpower and they're good people, and the rest of us, we're lacking willpower and we're down on ourselves about it. It's like, no, what you're doing is you're wasting your willpower on a bunch of stuff that doesn't matter. And the example I've been using recently is, it's a real simple example, but it's pretty well known. You know, when Steve Jobs was alive, he was known for wearing the same shirt every day. Like, the same type of shirt, right?
Yeah.
I think they were clean shirts, but it was always a black turtleneck. So when you think about his morning, when he got up out of bed, like, he just picked the black turtleneck on the pile of black turtlenecks. And, you know, and he was ready to go, whereas, like, I got out of bed and then I looked at, like, 20 different shirts and was like, well, which of these goes with these pants? And, you know, it's like I took 5 or 6 extra decisions just to get out the door, and already he would have been ahead of me. And so, like that's an example of someone very, very successful who'd taken away a lot of the decisions in his life. And actually, there was a interview with Barack Obama recently where he said, look, I've got too much to do. All I want to decide in the morning is, do I wear the blue suit or the gray suit?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, right. Yeah. I find this absolutely just so interesting. And if I may kind of take it into the exercising realm there, I think we find a lot of times where people try and do so much within their workout, they become so overwhelmed and they're exhausted by the time they even before they begin their workouts that they end up not even doing it. And just what you're saying, keeping it simple and just focusing on that one task, limiting the amount of decisions that you need to make, is actually going to help you get the goal that you want to get to. And so, for example, something that I did earlier this year was I just focused on one thing. I had a coach, and my coach told me exactly what I needed to do, and I only had to wake up that day and focus on that single task for my workout. I found that I made more progress by just focusing on that one thing because I didn't have to make a decision. I knew exactly what I needed to do that day. I went in there and I did it and I was done. I felt great about it. And to be honest, it was pretty simple. So what you're saying, I think, is just absolutely just incredible. And it just totally makes sense to me in regards to exercise and everything else out there. So,
you know, what's funny about it is, like, the latest kind of research from coaching and behavior design and psychology is really, like, I sometimes tell people it's un-American. Because what it's telling you is do less, but do it consistently, right? And, like, as Americans, like, part of our culture is always more, more, more. You know, like, if I'm a runner, it's not enough to run 30 miles a week. I got to run 100 miles a week, right? And it's, like, actually, there's a lot of the research is around, like, 80, 90, 95% of the value is in this the consistent parts, the simple parts, and all this focus on optimization is just actually kind of nutty.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say for people listening, we are going to get into some specific habits in a few minutes, especially since, Tony, since, like you said, you have the Lyft app and you have I asked before we started recording, you have access to a lot of really interesting data about the kinds of habits that people attempt and are successful or fail at. And we're going to get to some of those in a bit, because I think that's super interesting. But I also am really interested in this concept of the cognitive stamina and applying that. And like you said, focusing on the things that are important, because I think, I mean, to take the budget kind of analogy a little further, obviously some things cost more than others, right? And so do you think there's a correlation between decisions that are harder to make or take more mental energy and the value of them? You said that some decisions, maybe some optimization is a waste of time, right?
Well, for sure. So let's say it's borderline whether or not you even have enough energy to go to the gym at the end of the day,
yeah.
Right? Like, if it's borderline, that means when you get there, you're going to be in default mode. You don't have the energy to make these decisions to do weird exercises. Mm-hmm. So the reason, this kind of points to the reason why most people who go to the gym, who go to work out, just really stick with the same thing, right?
Yes.
It's like, I'm going to do 3 sets of 10 on the bench press, right? Like, I'm not going to vary that at all. Mm-hmm. Because it was just a chore just to get there, right? And so I think that's true when you're trying to introduce new workouts for people. You are fighting their cognitive stamina budget. And actually, you know, I was telling this to someone the other day, and they emailed me a week later, and they said, you know, I was really having, this is a tiny habit, but he said I was really having trouble flossing. And it's because it's at the end of the day and I'm exhausted. So I thought, well, what if I try flossing in the morning? And now it's so simple because it's completely fresh. Mm-hmm. And so this might be something for you guys or for the people listening. If you're trying to pick up a new workout routine, switch it to the morning when you're still fresh, right? Of course, it's going to be hard at night. It's like because you're worn out.
Yeah. I think that's great. And it actually, so you totally reminded me of where I was trying to go originally. And that's that, like, so we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, stretching and how stretching is something that a lot of people know they want to do, but they, you know, struggle to try to incorporate it. And I think that that's really what it comes down to, is maybe that, you know, they're used to doing the workout and, you know, building the strength and trying to get stronger and everything. But stretching is something that isn't as natural to most people. You know, most people's history with stretching is that they were forced to do it by some idiot gym coach in a really terrible way or something in high school, right? And after that, they're like, I'm never stretching again. And so trying to learn how to stretch properly and incorporate it into a workout then takes a lot more mental energy and cognitive budget than just saying, screw it, I'm just going to do my workout and not worry about the stretching.
So this was one of the questions I came in for you guys with, which is, you know, we're really interested in momentum, that, you know, positive momentum. Once someone gets going, then that turns into, you know, a bigger routine that lasts, you know, can last for weeks or months or even their own life. And so, you know, when I look at momentum, often I'm looking for what is the, you know, first big win, right? And like stretching, I feel like kind of sucks because it doesn't seem like it has an early win the way you feel really good about it, right? It's like, I hope that I get more flexible and that I don't get injured, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, and so for the stuff that you guys are doing, like, it looks like there's these early wins just because it's fun, right? It's fun to master something new. Is momentum something that you guys look at in your own training programs?
If I could answer that one, it's as far as the momentum goes, I think it's exactly what you said, is creating those small wins quickly in the beginning to keep people just to keep them going. And so, yes, there is that momentum, and it's all based upon the very basic skills. And so a lot of people coming into what we do, this is a completely new world for them. You mentioned earlier the bench press, things like that. You won't find that with what we do. A lot of the exercises that we're having people explore are new, and they have to explore because it's the first time maybe they've done this. And so we don't make it so difficult that a person becomes frustrated and wants to quit. It's about creating these very small wins by using these very basic fundamental exercises. But in actuality, by performing these fundamental exercises, they're going to be getting stronger so that when they go up to the next level, they're ready for it. So it's not that we're asking them to say, We're going to do the splits and we're going to make sure we get it within a month. No, it's everything, like everything, creating the baby steps and making sure that people understand that they are making progress, even if that progress is only a very, very small amount. Like with the splits, maybe just a couple centimeters or not even, or millimeters. It really doesn't matter. It's about understanding that you are progressing forward and having fun with it. So,
that's a great framework of it, because I was actually just reading research yesterday about the effect of uncertain outcomes on people's motivation. So basically, not like if you believe that something is valuable, but you have no idea when that value will come, is one of the biggest demotivators that's ever been measured. So this is exactly like, I think this explains why what you guys works, because like you're explicitly saying you're going to hit a milestone today, right? Or like there's something good coming almost immediately with the way you guys structure your plans. Whereas, you know, as going back to stretching, what we're saying is that at some point in the future, you won't get injured, but that future could be like a month from now or it could be 2 years from now. You have no real way of knowing. So this is like really, you can intellectually buy into the value, but you can't like, it's just your brain is wired to end up really doubting the value of stretching. Almost impossible probably to keep up with it.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. And I have a solution to that problem that I'm betting when you hear it, it'll actually apply to a lot of the things you've probably seen with Lyft. And so the way we teach stretching, we actually call it focused flexibility. And, you know, most stretching programs, when somebody says, oh, I need to stretch, you know, the thing in their mind is like the splits. And splits are like, you know, it takes a long time to get a split if you're not flexible already. And also, like you said, you don't know when it's going to happen. And in between, you've just got pain and inconvenience. But what we like to do is we have a kind of diagnostic, and you can see, like, where are you stiffest? What's the most important thing for you to stretch right now? And so, for example, a lot of people, it'll end up being like their hamstrings are really tight because we sit down a lot, you know, in this society. People have tight hamstrings. So instead of doing like a general flexibility thing and trying to work on splits and stuff like that, we actually just say, hey, here's a stretch that'll work on focusing on your hamstrings, and do this for 5 minutes for the next week, and you will notice less tightness in your hamstrings. And so it's actually by focusing in really tightly on something specific rather than some kind of nebulous big general goal, we allow people to see results a lot sooner. And I think that really does help with building the momentum and the consistency.
Yeah, that's a great way to frame it. Because, I mean, that is, that you're exactly right. That hits at the momentum, gives people some, you know, actual chance at succeeding.
Cool. So I'd really like to ask, based on your experience with Lyft, then, you said, you know, with health and fitness, stretching is one that you see a lot of. But what are some of the general kind of trends, maybe some of the most popular goals people are kind of, obviously, if they're trying to use an app to help them achieve it, I guess it means that it's something that they probably are having some difficulty achieving on their own. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think basically what we see in people is that everyone has an unmet aspiration, no matter how successful you are. You know, this company, I founded this company with really like people that had been really successful. I basically co-designed Lyft with one of the founders of Twitter. So like, here's a guy like that I look up to, and I see him that he's very successful. He, like, his company just IPO'd, right? Like, you can't get more successful than that. But here he is, just absolutely obsessed with self-improvement. So it's really that's just the human condition. We always want to be better versions of ourselves. And in that 100,000 things that people are working on and Lyft, there's like the top category is health and fitness, followed by productivity, followed by relationship and career. But actually, so when we look at the absolute most popular, there's two habits that people work on. One is a pretty general, just they want to exercise more. And that for a long time, that's been the most popular. But there's one that's just about to pass it, that, which is drink more water. And I think that's kind of a funny one because it gets at, again, this sense of momentum, because drink more water is actually, as we've measured it, the easiest habit in Lyft. Right? Like people are more successful, right?
Yeah, it can't get much easier than drink more water.
Right? Like, I mean, you know, what does that even, it maybe means fill your glass of water up a little bit higher than the day before, right? It's like, it's really easy to even satisfy that that goal. But, and, you know, the impact, I'm not even sure what the impact of it is. I probably, for people that are using water as a replacement for soda, it's doing a lot for them. But if you're just, like, normally hydrated and you want to be very hydrated, it's not, like...
kind of negligible or dubious impact. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But it correlates with all sorts of other things in Lyft, which, including that those people are more likely to be successful on their other goals. And so here we have this prime example of momentum in action. Here they picked up this really easy goal, drink more water. They started succeeding, and it created this sense of momentum where they could then tackle their other goals. And I see that all the time where people are just like a little bit stuck. They feel like, oh, you know, I can't change my life. And the second you show them that they can, then they like become completely unblocked and they try to, you know, tackle everything. And so here's like another common story we get told is they'll say, hey, look, guys, you know, this is working really well. At first I tried to lose some weight. And so I lost, you know, like 10 pounds, which is amazing. Now that I've lost 10 pounds, I'm studying Italian because I want to go to Europe. Right. And it's like, well, what did going to Europe have to do with losing 10 pounds, man? You could just go to Europe. I mean, assuming you can afford it. Right. Like these things are not combined.
Yeah.
But I mean, the reality of the story, because we hear it so often, is that, you know, people get kind of obsessed with some failure where they're not, you know, they're not able to make progress. They're not able to, you know, exercise. They're not able to eat a healthy diet. And then they're just stuck on that. And the second you can give them some momentum, then everything else they want to do in their life opens up.
That's really interesting. And so it kind of makes me think too, if you say, you know, the number one most popular, it's not going to be for long, but most popular so far has been exercise. And if you just say exercise too, then I'd say that that's one of those things that really depletes your cognitive stamina, because it's such a vague thing. There's no goal there. It's not as clear as, you know, for example, if you're trying to lose weight, lose 10 pounds. You know, if you just say exercise, then you have to figure out what exercise to do. You have to go and you have to figure out what program you're going to follow, or are you going to run or lift weights, or all these different things. I think if you just say exercise, it opens up a lot of decisions there. You know, whereas,
exactly.
You know, drink more water, obviously, like you said, it's so simple to do and to be successful at. And maybe just no matter what your goal, even if you do want to learn Italian, maybe just train yourself on starting to drink a little more water.
Yeah.
There you go. You're set.
I mean,
and you know what, Tony, this is your new app. This is your new app right there. You just call it Drink More Water. You're set. Millionaire. Bam. Right there.
Right. This is how you become a millionaire. I'll be one of those, you know, make $1 million self-help gurus. And it's like, step one, drink more water.
Drink more water.
the water.
All your problems solved. There you go.
But, you know, the science backs it up, and that's what's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Your point, like, you guys are totally wrapped your heads around this cognitive stamina thing, because you're right. In order to exercise, you have to make a decision on what sort of exercise do you want to do. And we just started – recently we started rolling out coaching programs and training programs that actually tell you explicitly what to do. We've got one right now. It's called 10,000 squats. And it's just like a small number of bodyweight squats, you know, every day that you feel like doing squats. And it's of the training programs, one of the most popular right now, because you don't have to think. You don't have to go to the gym. You can do it anywhere. And it's not that hard. And so like you know, the science part of my brain that's actually read up on, you know, like muscle and strength training is like, wow, this plan is really not optimized for it's not the most efficient way to strength gain,
right.
But it is this incredible momentum builder. And, it's like, I just see these people, they pick up on it and they get rolling and they're like, they're doing squats practically every day. And the plan even reminds you like, hey, your muscle's not going to, build, your strength isn't going to build up unless you give yourself some recovery time. But I don't think that's what it's about for people. I think it's just get up and moving. You start to think about yourself differently if you're someone that exercises every day.
You got to be like Kramer. Yeah. You can't break the chain, right?
Right.
I love that about the Lyft app, actually, is that if you slack off for a day, like the next time you pick up your phone, it's like, hey, slacker, you didn't do this shit yesterday. It's a little nicer than that, but
we try to be friendly about it.
It's very friendly. It's very friendly. Maybe you need to have an option for the kick in the ass version.
Right. Turn on mean mode.
Yeah. So we talked about like a couple of habits that, even if they might be of, kind of negligible value for people that are already healthy, they still build a lot of momentum and get people maybe better at establishing new habits and reaching towards goals, which is awesome in itself. I'd like to ask you now, based on kind of the data that you have, what are some of the habits that people fail at that they fall off the wagon on most commonly?
Yeah, this is interesting because there's so many different ways to define what is the hardest habit.
True.
Of the popular habits that we look at that are in that category of like they're hard and you can see it in the data that the it's hard for people to stick with them. The three that I'm most likely to look at are no alcohol, no smoking, and no sweets. And I'm actually just finished 42 days of I did 42 days of no sweets. Took a cheat day yesterday, and now I'm back on it. And so, like I know I like in this moment, I'm thinking about how hard those kind of addictive habit, like breaking a, some sort of minor addiction. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly when it comes to no alcohol, we're not AA, right? This is like a social drinker who's putting on pounds that like thinks their life is normal, but wants to cut back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what we see there is that on the one hand, they tend to be harder and that's measurable, but on the other hand, people tend to want them more. And so it's actually the pattern that we're most likely to see is that it takes them a while to get started, right? Like they'll have one no alcohol and then they'll have like 2 weeks and then, or they'll have one no sweets and then a week with where they don't check in and then they'll have 2 days in a row of no sweets. And so it takes them a while to get on a streak. And then the other thing we see is each of these goals in Lyft have kind of mini communities of the people going through it with you. So when we looked at what are the hardest, we also looked at what are the most supportive. So these three were actually came up as three of the top five most supportive goals inside of Lyft, which means that you're most likely to get cheered on by someone else in the habit with you. And I thought that was a really kind of cool observation.
That is really, really interesting. The first thing that popped in my head when you mentioned those is that all three of those are actually kind of like deprivation goals, right? You want to stop doing something that you've already established as a lifelong or, years long habit of eating sweets, drinking alcohol or smoking. And then trying to cut that out is actually, I've found that when people try to stop doing an ingrained habit, it's a lot harder than trying to begin a new habit a lot of times.
Actually, the brain scientists kind of think that you never break habits, that once you have a habit, it's wired in your brain forever, and that what you're actually doing is building up a set of replacement habits. Mm-hmm. And you eventually want those replacement habits to to be stronger than the old, bad habit. And so, for no sweets, an easy one is like, if you're out for dinner, then you need to create the habit of when the dessert menu comes, you either order the cheese plate or you order the tea, right?
Yeah.
Like that's your rule. And then once you have that, then then you just know, like, you don't even have to look at the menu. It's like, I want a tea. And same, like, for people that have a soda problem, you just, water is your replacement habit. So when you sit down, you know, at a restaurant, when you sit down at your desk, when you come home from work, you're like, okay, time for a water. Mm-hmm. And you have to get, if you get really on that water habit, then it's not so much that you no longer have the sweets habit. It's just that you've replaced it with something else that's bigger and stronger.
I think that you also hit on something with the way you phrase it there that I have found has really been beneficial to me personally, is that you create rules, very simple rules, that like when the dessert menu comes out, you know ahead of time, I'm going to get coffee now. Or, you know, whatever your rule is, or like when I sit down at my desk, I'm going to start drinking my water or whatever. But you make very simple rules for yourself that are easy to follow. And then you don't have to decide. You don't have to think, and you don't have the temptation of doing something else that you don't want to do.
Right. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? So just basically keeping it simple and making sure that, you know, when you wake up in the morning saying, OK, this is the shirt I'm going to wear. And the only shirt I'm going to wear, you know, instead of having to, you know, think about, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Make those rules, but keep it so simple that you don't even have to think about it.
We worked with a professor at Stanford, BJ Fogg, who...
Oh, I've studied some of his stuff, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. But, you know, one of the things he did with us is he had us compare the effect of techniques that involve motivation versus techniques that involve ability. Mm-hmm. And it's actually like everyone is really focused on motivation. Like, how can we cheer this person on? How can we threaten them? How can we incent them to do it? But when you actually look at when you compare the two categories of techniques, things that involve ability end up being just an order of magnitude more effective. So if you think of like pre-deciding, simplifying, making rules. Like for me, actually, our office is right across from a gym. And that's very intentional for me, like, because I'm the boss, I get to decide these things. I was like, I want to be near a gym so that like I don't have to think about how do I get to the gym? Do I have time to get to the gym? It's like, if I feel like working out, I just walk across the street and I work out. And that's not a motivation trick. That's an ability trick. It's way easier for me to get to my workout than, you know, it was in our last set of offices.
That's really, really very, very interesting. And I'd say it's totally coincides with what we've discovered with coaching our clients, too, is that trying to motivate people, even if they really want something, it's very, very difficult. And motivating your way into new habits or out of old habits is just hard. But yeah, when you create simple rules like this or create an environment where your office is right next to the gym, then it makes things so much easier to follow through with.
I don't understand why people are so obsessed with motivation, because look, we're not dealing with the prison population. We're not like trying to rehabilitate criminals. Like we're dealing, like people come to us already motivated. Like mm-hmm. they're telling us like, hey, I want to do this. Right. So we don't need to convince them. And we just need to make it easy for them. And yes, definitely part of the Lyft mindset.
That's awesome. And so if you don't mind, I'd really love if you could tell us, just to kind of sum up maybe what you think for people, since we're in the fitness world, for people trying to create healthier habits or improve their fitness in some way, what would you say are like the top one or two things that they should keep in mind that can really help them maybe make the fastest path to momentum and really, really start, you know, achieving goals?
Well, so I think we've basically given people enough information today that they can put themselves in one of two categories. Either you're not working out because you're exhausted, in which case any aspect of your life that you can make easier, make simpler, like, you know, figuring out what to wear to work, increases the likelihood that you're going to be able to work out. So if you're in that category, any habit to simplify your life, try and give yourself enough mental energy, cognitive stamina to get your fitness goals. The other category is you don't know what to do, right? And so this is find yourself a simple plan. It, like, give up on this idea that it's going to be completely optimized. Find something that instead can give you a routine. And like, once you have some sort of exercise routine, that's something that you can build on. And so I know you guys have training programs. Lyft every day is adding more and more simple training programs. So just start with something where you can be consistent.
I think that's great. Can you tell everyone really quickly a little bit more about Lyft, how they can find it and how they can start using it today? Because I'd really rather people like just download it and use it now and start drinking water.
We're going to be great for the water industry, which is actually, it was funny. It's actually the soda industry that controls a lot of the water industry. Here's what people should do. They should go to our website, lyft.do, and we have links there for the iPhone version, for the web version, which is right there, and for the Android version.
Awesome. And we'll definitely post that link on the page for this blog post, for this podcast, I mean.
Right.
I'm saying everything wrong today. Cool. Ryan, do you have anything else?
I just want to say thank you, Tony. This is great. I whenever we have someone on here, I try and let Andy run with it. But, I learned a lot, and it was great talking with you. So I hope that we can follow up sometime and get more info from you and just shoot the breeze. So thanks again.
Yeah. Brian, Andy, yeah. Thank you guys so much. This was super fun.
Super. I do have just one last question. Actually, you are the second Tony we've had on this podcast. So I want to know, have you ever heard of Tony Two Scoops?
Tony Two Scoops? No.
Oh, you gotta look him up.
You gotta check him up.
He'll change your life.
Okay, I will.
All right. Thanks again, Tony.
Thank you.
Take care, you guys.
Thank you.